People are the bridge. Science by itself can be just a dry bunch of facts. But scientists are not dry bunches of facts. We're human beings who do science for a reason. And that motivation is in many ways a religious motivation, even if we don't put that phrase on it. And likewise, people of religion are people. They're not books. They're not scripture. They're people who are reacting to the experience of life and trying to make sense of it using both their heart and their head. Not all that different from what science is. People are the bridge.
So much of religion is faith, and faith in the unknown. In science, as you mentioned, sometimes it's very rigid and we're using numbers or findings. You shake your head no.
No. Both require faith. You have to have faith in the science you're doing before you can start to do it, before you know whether you've actually come up with a good answer. You have to have faith in your ability to have chosen a problem worth studying and a problem that actually will have an answer. You have to have faith in so many things. And sometimes it comes up short, and that shows you that it is faith. And likewise, you can't do religion only on faith. You have to have a thing, an experience, a relationship, a moment in your life that is the touchstone that makes you a person of faith.
Is science a way to connect with God or to find and discover God?
Absolutely, yes. Science is how, one way, not the only way, but one way, that I am in a relationship with the Creator. That works because I know God to be the Creator of the universe. There are some religions that don't buy that. I don't know how you can be a scientist and a Buddhist, though they exist, and I have good friends who are. You have to do interesting different things with your theology, I suspect. But for a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim who says the universe is good, it's worth spending your time studying, and it was made by a God who made it according to rules and order, that's what you have to believe before you can even start to do science. And once you do the science, then you encounter that God who created and that God who loved and that God who had reason.
Tell me about the work that you do.
My own research is trying to understand, ultimately, the big goal is, how is the solar system formed? Well, it's too big a project for any one person to come up with an answer. It's a cathedral, and we're all building bricks and adding our own little brick to it. So my little contribution for the last 20 years is simply to make measurements of the fundamental properties of these meteorites that come from the asteroid belt, that are the fragments that made up the planets. And this is a kind of peculiar work that gets done a lot at the Vatican Observatory and not elsewhere, because it takes 20 years to come up with an answer. You know, if you were trying to get tenure, if you're trying to get a three-year NSF grant, you wouldn't be able to devote that length of time to the project. But because we're funded by the Vatican and we're told just do good science, we can do the really necessary, if not all the time, glamorous work that allows our colleagues to be able to carry their work forward.
You mentioned study of meteorites. There is this theory that life can be brought to other planets via a transplanting on a meteorite.
Yeah. One of the things we've discovered in our meteorites is not just that they're riddled with cracks, but we can measure the cracks. And the cracks are of a size that microbes could fit in them. So it's certainly possible that life could be transmitted from Mars to Earth, maybe even from Earth to Mars under the right circumstances. We don't know. One of the reasons you want to get to Mars is to find out, does it have life? And if so, is it like our life or is it different? And one of the reasons I worry about human beings going to Mars too soon is that, you know, you put some person on Mars and they're going to leak E. coli and all sorts of terrestrial life all over the place. And then 20 years later, you find it and you go, was this Martian or was this terrestrial? We've got to be very careful to not poison the very things we're trying to study. But it's an exciting idea. It doesn't solve the problem, ultimately, of where did the life come from. Just by moving it to a different planet doesn't answer it. But it reminds you that the problem is probably a whole lot trickier than any one single answer is going to tell you.
How do you address the person who says, and you know the question I'm going to ask, Adam and Eve? That is the start of humanity.
Genesis is not a book about Adam and Eve. Genesis is a book about God. And there are so many different creation stories, And every one of them is telling you something really important about God. The Adam and Eve story is a story. Even if you believe it were literally true, you have to admit it's also a story. The truth is in the story. The truth is in the fact that there was a time on planet Earth when there were no people. There's a time now where there are people. So somewhere along the line, there had to be a first one. What makes that person? The experience of life, what they call the tree of life. And what is sin? Choosing to experience evil just because you can. But we know that the human soul, the image and likeness of God, is the ability to recognize that I exist, that I am experiencing life, and the freedom to choose. And the blessed person is the one who is free to choose and chooses good.
We're celebrating one of those pioneers in space travel, Roger B. Jaffe. When you look back and you think of the progression of space exploration, where is Chaffee in that in your mind, and how do you recognize him?
Chaffee is one of the unsung heroes. He's not one of the names that a lot of people know. And yet, without his work, you know, his work in the Gemini program and then his work towards Apollo, we wouldn't have gotten to the moon. It requires a human life, not necessarily a life that dies too young like his, but a life dedicated to this work that might have been dedicated to something else. You know, he could have been a banker, and nothing wrong with being a banker. We need bankers. He could have been a baseball star. Nothing wrong with that. He chose to dedicate his life to this one thing he was good at, because he could do it better than the rest of us. And it reminds us that going to the moon was not something that Neil Armstrong did all by himself, but something that an enormous community of people, the other astronauts, the other engineers, the people who made the plans, the people who taught the people who made the plans, the people who fed the people who taught the people who made the plans, the cops who kept the streets safe so you could get on to your work to make the plans, all of us as a society did this wonderful thing under really difficult times. And he was one who in particular put his life on the line. And you just have to honor him for that.
The tragedy on the launch pad, what did that do for the United States and space exploration?
The tragedy was a crucial moment. It could have been a moment for people to throw up their hands and say, we can't do it. But instead, it was a moment where people took in a deep breath and said, okay, we can do better. We thought we were doing pretty good, but we were wrong. We can do better. Everybody in their life faces moments like that. And it's how you react to them that determines what your character is. And the character of America in 1967-68, faced with that tragedy, is one that we can be proud of.
Are we on the right track? Oftentimes, NASA, its planning is based on budgeting off and by legislators. Mm-hmm. But are we on the right track in where we're heading with the idea of going to Mars? I believe there will be a mission to the moon first, yeah, and then to Mars.
I honestly don't know. I've been in this business 40 years and cynical enough to hear so many plans. We're going to go back to the moon. I think that there are things that NASA does better than anybody else can do. And that especially is in organizing people to new things, to high-risk things, like sending robots to Mars. When it comes time to actually live in space, I'm pretty much an admirer of the people who are doing that commercially, because ultimately that's how it's going to have to happen. And there's nothing wrong with both sides working towards it. An awful lot of the technology that goes into that airplane that you're flying when you take a flight from here to California was technology developed by the government through NASA and yet used by commercial airplane builders and commercial airlines. That's a partnership. And that, I think, is the future of how we will live in space.
So there's the next great technological leap that we will all feel at some point in our lifetime.
There might be a technological leap, but I'm thinking it's more likely to be a sociological leap. You know, the genius of the Apollo landing was not the science. Everybody knew the science for 100 years. It wasn't even the engineering. The engineering, though good, wasn't any breakthrough. The breakthrough was that someone figured out how to get 400,000 engineers and secretaries and metal managers and all of the tasks that you need to get a project like that done, all done in 10 years. It was a miracle of management.